what a powerful message that you're putting out. And it's so very much in alignment, obviously, with what we're doing. It's about dealing with news that's empowering, not creating sort of a fear-based.
Yeah, I think also that, people have need to reach a point where information that would, in the normal course of events, frighten them, actually empowers them. Because one of the things that I'm pointing out to people is that, you know, this knowledge, this information is now coming to light. And people say, oh, it's negative. Well, it's not negative. It's negative when we don't know about it. The veil's lifting. The universe is lifting the veil. And therefore, it's a wonderful time. And we should look at this information as empowering, because knowledge is power. And lack of knowledge is what takes our power away. And so it's very important that we get into a space where we can have apparently, quote, negative information, but it empowers us because it's informing us, it's making us more aware, and therefore giving us a greater understanding of the choices that we have every day.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the thing that we get a lot of dialogue and a lot of questions about with people that are trying to be sort of in a better place in their consciousness and in their life, and they're trying to figure out how they deal with the quote-unquote negative. You know, do you just ignore everything and stick your head in the sand, or is there a middle ground somewhere? And that seems to be the learning curve with all this. Like, what do you do, and where do you focus? And you know, if you go on the issue of, like, what you focus on expands, then do you completely ignore stuff that seems yucky on the surface?
Yeah, well, nothing ever got changed by running away from it. And for me, we have got to realize that negative remains negative until you shine light on it. And negative works most effectively in secret. And if people just want to think they can walk away and just leave the negative to it because it's negative or mustn't empower it, well, the negative just says, oh, thanks very much, I'll just carry on as usual then, no problem. And away we go. And it goes on doing its stuff day after day, while so many people just look the other way because they can't face, well, they don't want to look at what they don't want to know. I mean, so many people I come across around the world, or not so much today because there's an awakening going on, but certainly over the years, it's almost the way they react against the information that I'm putting out is so over the top, because they're basically saying, shut up, I don't want to hear it, okay? It's much better if they don't know it exists and they don't know what's going on, because then they can kid themselves that they don't have to do anything. And subconsciously, and increasingly very close to the conscious, they know that if they look at this information and they look at what's really going on, then their lives are going to change.
Yeah.
And they don't want to face that, because one of the great fears that human beings have is the fear of change. And they would much rather be in the dark, being ignorant of what's going on, and therefore have an excuse to do nothing about it, so their lives can just tick along as normal, than to actually know what's going on, and therefore have to face a very different world to the one they thought they were living in.
Yes, well, I would definitely say your message is about getting out of the comfort zone. Maybe, can we start, where is the beginning of this story? Where does the story start for you?
Well, for me, it starts back in the 1980s, really. It started the moment I was born, when I look back, but I wasn't really conscious until the 1980s.
I was going to say, maybe we could catch it up a little later in the story then.
I was born into what we call in Britain a working-class family. We were absolutely skint. And I went through a kind of normal working-class childhood, but always wanted to be a professional soccer player, and my life has been a series of amazing synchronicities, if you like, whereby I have decided what I want to do, and then the opportunities have unfolded to allow me to do that. So I became a soccer player, and then that ended when I got rheumatoid arthritis at the end of the age of 21, and I became a journalist, which was my next choice after that, and I worked in newspapers and radio and stuff, and then at the the end of the 1970s, early 1980s, I became a network television presenter with the BBC in Britain, became well known among the people, and then around the mid 1980s particularly, I started to and I became a national spokesman for the British Green Party for a few years, and you know, presenting television programs became increasingly meaningless for me, really. And then towards the end of the 1980s, I had some very very strange experiences, which eventually manifested as a complete change of, you know, my whole life, really. Towards the end of the 80s, early 90s, I started getting this feeling that there was a presence around me all the time, and I'd be in a room, and it was like someone else was there, even though I was apparently alone. And I remember in the early 90s, sitting in a hotel room while I was working for the BBC, a place called the Kensington Hilton Hotel near Shepherd's Bush in London. And I sat on the side of the bed and I said, look, for goodness sake, if you're there, if there's something there, would you please contact me, because you're driving me mad. And a very short time after this, I was down the seafront here in a little island called the Isle of Wight, just off Portsmouth, off the south coast of England where I live, with my son, who's now 19, he's a little boy then, and we were going to go into a cafe to have a bit of lunch, and someone stopped me in the street to talk to me, and he went into a newsagent to read the books and look at the magazines and stuff. And then when I went in to find him, to, you know, go and have some lunch, amazing things happened to me. I'm standing there, and I said to him, come on, Gareth, we'll go off and have some lunch now. And as I turned to move, my feet were stuck to the ground. They wouldn't move. I don't hear voices or things like that, because I just follow my intuition. The urge is that to be in this place at that time, and to go here or do that at this time, and all that stuff that goes on when you follow the inner impulses that flow through us. But in this early awakening time, consciously awakening time, I had three very clear voices in my head at key points, and one of them was now, and it said, basically, go and see the books on the far side. And I knew this newsagent well, and on the far side they used to carry books about, you know, novels about perfectly formed English roses having perfect relationships with perfectly formed soldiers, you know, that kind of stuff. Not my scene at all. But I went over there for two reasons. One, I was absolutely intrigued by what the hell was happening to me, and secondly, that's the only way my feet would move. And so I went over there, and in among these books that I've just talked about was one that caught my eye immediately, and had a woman's face on the front. And I picked it up, turned over, read the blurb, and I saw the word psychic. And so I thought, psychic. And it was the story of this lady who was a hands-on healer, and it's, you know, did psychic stuff. And so I was intrigued because of this apparent presence I couldn't explain that was with me wherever I went. So I read the book in 24 hours and got immediately in contact with this lady, and because I was well known as a television presenter in Britain, she came back to me immediately, and I went over to see her. And you know, you feel a bit of a burk at this time, because you know, this is all new to me, you know, new to my conscious level, not the rest of me, of course. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh well, what I want to do is I want to come and see you, because I have this arthritis, which was true, and could I have some hands-on healing? But my real motive was to go over, not tell her what had been happening to me, and see if she picked up anything around me. And I went a couple of times, we had some nice chats and got the hands-on healing, which was very nice, and all that stuff. And then I went the third time. I only went four times in all. And I never forget it. I'm lying on this bench. She's doing the hands-on healing on my knee, actually, my left knee. And I'm just sitting there, and suddenly I felt like a spider's web on my face. Very, very powerful. And this took me aback, because I'd read in this lady's book, she was saying that sometimes when other levels or dimensions are trying to lock into you, then you feel like a spider's web on your face. Funnily enough, I've never felt it since, only at that moment. And about 15 seconds after I'm feeling this spider's web, suddenly she launches her head backwards and says, oh my God, I've got to shut my eyes for this one. And I'm slipping lower and lower on this bench, because I'm new to all this stuff, you know. And she started saying that she had this vision of this being in front of her in her psychic mind, and she was being asked to pass on messages to me from this source. And I'm sitting there thinking, crikey, you know, introducing the television programs was far more easier than this, you know. I mean, what's going on in my life? And what she said at that time, and staggering really when you look at what I'm doing now, was that I was a healer who had come to heal the earth, that there was a massive shadow which had to be lifted, and there was a story that humanity had to be told, that I would go out eventually on a world stage and be world famous and face enormous opposition, but, quote, they, whoever they are, would always be there to protect me, that I would write 5 books in 3 years on these subjects, which I did to the month. It's about 10 now. And what was one line? One man cannot change the world, but one man can communicate the message that can change the world. And a series of other things, which have, you know, at the time I thought, this is ridiculous. I introduced television programs. I learned nothing about this. But it, as the years have unfolded, so what was said at that time has happened. And,
well, what was your belief system at the time? I mean, I know as a journalist myself, I mean, we're very conditioned to think, you know, quacks and keeping your feet on the ground. And what was your belief system at
that time? Well, funny enough, I've always had an open mind, you see. I was brought up in a family that was extremely anti-religion, because my father was in the medical corps in the British Army during the Second World War in North Africa. And then as the Allied troops moved north through Italy, he went with them, picking up the debris of war, and he saw fantastic wealth in the Roman Catholic churches in Italy, surrounded by abject, breathtaking poverty in places like Naples. And it fundamentally turned him against religion, organized religion, all his life. Unfortunately, my father threw the baby out with the bathwater, as we say in Britain, in the sense that he confused spirituality with religion. They're not the same thing. They can be in some people, but they're usually not. And therefore, wrote off any idea of, you know, continuation of life after what we call ludicrously call death, and so that's the environment I got brought up in. Now, I bought the religion part because that never made sense to me, but I didn't buy the other side of what he was suggesting, because I always felt that there was far more to life than we, even as a kid, than we were being told. And I certainly didn't buy the scientific idea of what passes for science, that we're a cosmic accident that somehow manifests for a few seconds or 100 years its consciousness and then goes back to oblivion. So that's I had an open mind, but until, Nicole, that this started to happen to me, I hadn't really focused on what the alternative to those two imposters was. And from that time on, I really did start to focus on it. And also, the synchronicity of life from that time that I've just described started putting information and people and experiences in my face, one after the other, at an extremely fast pace. And therefore, I learned a lot and understood a lot very quickly as a result of that.
How would you summarize what the path has been? I know this is a tough one, but what is the point of your mission in sort of a summary form?
Well, I've been on a journey that is twofold. I've been on my own journey and awakening from the slumber that I, like everyone else, was in, buying the illusion. I didn't buy into it totally, even as a kid, but you obviously don't understand the magnitude of the illusion that passes the daily life on this planet currently. So I've been on my own path of emotional and spiritual experiences that has awakened me more and more and put things in my face that have led me to face myself and also to let go of the conditioning that I took on board, you know, in the earlier part of my life. And the second part of it is to communicate what I learn and what I understand through my own experience on a spiritual level, and also because what's happening is that, and what's happened since that time I described, is that information has been put in my lap in nearly 30 countries that I've been to now since that time, of how the world is nothing like we think it is, and how it's actually controlled by very few people, and that these people have been in control, these bloodlines, and indeed the consciousness that incarnates into those bloodlines, has been in control of this planet for thousands of years, eons in truth probably, but certainly thousands of years, and that the very bottom line of this control has been to destroy and suppress through ridicule or violence the knowledge of who we are and the nature of life itself. And what has been done is that there's been an onslaught on the human conscious mind and human consciousness in general, which has disconnected most incarnate consciousness from its multidimensional self. And you know, I can talk at length about the political and financial and business and media manipulation, which expresses itself in everyday life as well. But the bottom line of the control and the means through which it is possible for a few to control billions, literally, is by disconnecting them from the true magnitude of who they are, and isolating incarnate consciousness from the ocean, if you like, the multidimensional self. And therefore, once you can isolate incarnate consciousness from higher dimensions of itself, that consciousness is looking and can only look in one direction for a fix on who it is and the nature of life and what's going on around it, and that is through its eyes and through its ears, out into this physical world. And if you can do two things, which this network has done and worked thousands of years to do, isolate incarnate consciousness from its multidimensional self, and then control the information that comes the other way through the eyes and the ears, you can actually take this droplet of consciousness animating a physical body and program it to see the world as you want them to see it, and therefore behave the way you want them to behave. And this is what's happened for thousands of years, and it's getting more and more sophisticated. But we're in a cycle now, very clearly, and like I say, I've been in 30 countries in the last 10, 11 years or so, and this idea of an awakening is no myth, and it's not going on in one place, it's going on everywhere. There's a spiritual alarm clock going off, and it's to do, I'm sure, with vibrational cycles that are hitting the earth at this time. And we're in a situation now where the great slumber, the big sleep of thousands of years can come to an end, and for many people in increasing numbers it already is.
So how did you get, how did this first start coming to you, this information? Like, did you start researching it, you know, as a journalist?
Well, I think, you know, when you talk to researchers into the global conspiracy, they all come to this understanding of what's going on from different directions. You know, some come in by investigating the banking system and realizing it's a 100% total scam in which you lend people money that doesn't exist and charge them interest on it, and therefore get everyone in debt to you on money that has never, will never, and does not exist. And they look at the banking system and they realize that's a scam, and then they go a bit further and they realize, hey, that's not the scam, that's just part of the scam. Other people come into it by researching extraterrestrial activity and realize the massive suppression of knowledge there, and then some of them realize, actually, the suppression of the knowledge of extraterrestrials is not the scam, it's part of the scam. Other people start investigating the suppression of alternative healing methods or the outrageous behavior of the transnational drug corporations. In fact, corporation, if the truth be told, because they have an interlocking leadership. And they realize the medical scam is not actually the scam, it's part of the scam. For me, it was as a direct result of what happened to me, as I've described. I had this spiritual awakening when my psyche was teased open seriously for the first time in 1990 with these experiences. And then I realized that there was a tremendous amount of information about the nature of life, which fundamentally challenged what we laughingly call science and religion. And so I thought to myself at that time, hey, hold on a minute. I've lived a very out there life. You know, I've been a journalist. I've been a television presenter. I've done this. I've done that. Why didn't I know this information existed? And why isn't it in the mainstream? Why isn't this stuff taught in the schools? This is ridiculous. I then started asking questions. Why is it suppressed, and who the heck is suppressing it, and why? And, you know, to what end? And that was the way that I came in to realize that the suppression of spiritual knowledge, not just now, but with the expansion of the so-called Great British Empire, nothing great about it, and these other European empires, when they went into the Americas, when they went into Africa, when they went into Australia and Asia, what they were doing was destroying the native knowledge which held a lot of this truer history of humanity and spiritual awareness and passed it on through the generations. They actually systematically, and they used Christianity to do it, destroyed and suppressed that knowledge and killed many of the people, the shaman who carried it. And the reason they did it was because they wanted to suppress that and not allow people to see the nature of life and who they are and the fact that we create our own reality. Therefore, we are in total control of our destiny if only we take that power back instead of giving it away. And I then realized as the years passed, not too many years because of the synchronicity of the way this happened to me, that like everyone else, the suppression of spiritual knowledge was not the scam, although it was fundamental to it. It was part of the bigger scam. And so I started investigating all these other areas of banking and business and politics and military and media and extraterrestrial activity. And suddenly the picture started to form, and it was much bigger than anyone could imagine when they first start walking the journey.
So somehow all of these things tie together.
Everything ties together. I mean, there's this saying in the old, among the people who talk about spirituality, everything is part of everything else, and there's no greater example of it than this global conspiracy in which everything fits in with everything else. You see, I'll give you an example. The way the structure of this conspiracy works, and the way that a few people control the many and dictate to the many and direct the many, with the many having no idea it's happening, is through a structure which is like Russian dolls, one doll inside another, inside another, inside another, until you have one big doll that encompasses all the others. The structure that they've got is pyramids inside pyramids inside pyramids. So if you've got, for instance, a bank, and that's a pyramid, a compartmentalized pyramid. The people at the bottom of that bank who you hand your check over to in the local branch, they've not got a clue what that bank is there for, what its agenda is, what it's really part of, and what it's trying to achieve. They just know enough to do the job that they're paid to do. They have no idea what the bank manager behind them in the office in the local branch is deciding, never mind higher up the bank. The bank manager, doesn't know what's happening at the next level. They don't know what's happening at the level above them, and so on and so forth. And eventually you get to the top of this pyramid where you've got a tiny few people in that bank, a handful, and they're the only ones that know how all those little individual contributions within the organization fit together. And innocent they may seem to the people making those contributions every day and then going home to their families, but when you fit them all together and you see how the pieces fit into the puzzle, you start to realize that the sum total of it is anything but innocent. It is actually extremely sinister. Now that bank then goes into the next pyramid, and eventually you have a pyramid that encompasses the whole of the global banking system. And at the top of that, you have a handful of interbreeding bloodline families that go back to the ancient world, where they were the kings and the queens and royal families of the ancient world. And it's the same with the transnational corporations. You know, there's a lot of stuff talked about quite rightly now about what's happening with this thing called globalization. Globalization is very simple. It's centralization of power, which is what this network has been trying to achieve for a very, very long time. If there's a few of you and you want power over the many, you must centralize power of decision-making. The more diverse the decisions, the more points of decision-making there are in the world, the less power a few are going to have over those decisions. You have to centralize. And so this is why they want the world government, the world army, the world central bank, the world currency, and the microchip population. People talk now with globalization, this centralization of power in all areas of our lives, about the fact that something like 200 corporations now account for a quarter of the world's economic activity. What they don't realize, even at that level, is that if you go high enough in the pyramids of these 200 corporations, they are one corporation. In all these different areas of our lives, if you go up high enough, you hit the same people. Now, one example of how this fits together, for instance, is that if you want to, and they have to achieve their ends, if you want to suppress the true potential of the human entity, then you have to hit us on all levels. And this is because of this pyramidal structure in which all the different pyramids of different aspects of our society eventually fuse into one pyramid peak. It means that the few at that level can pass down these pyramidal structures, which at the bottom level in society where we operate daily, they look to be totally unconnected, but at the top they're completely connected. You can pass down the same basic policies and agenda for the centralization of power on a global level in all areas of our lives. It also means that through religion and through what we call science, you can suppress and ridicule spiritual knowledge and the knowledge that we are actually consciousness and we're all part of one consciousness and we are creating our own reality all the time and therefore we can control our own destiny whenever we choose. You can do that, but down other pyramids coming down in this structure, you can put additives in the food and you can put stuff in vaccines in children that fundamentally suppress the brain's ability to be a conduit for consciousness and to be able to connect fully to other dimensions of reality. So you can hit people on all different levels of being once you control all these different institutions of society from one pyramid peak, which is what they do. And it's very, very important, I would suggest, that people who are in pressure groups against environmental destruction, opposing vaccines for children, opposing additives in food, and opposing fluoride in the water, which is another brain suppressant. Fluoride was first put in water in the Nazi concentration camps to suppress and make docile the inmates. And the people are battling against the banking scam and all this stuff and against political corruption. It's important that the people who are specializing in those areas, and we need those people, realize that actually they are all challenging the same force. And once you can see that structure, then the world becomes a little bit more simple, and when we can start to focus on the force that is responsible for all these things rather than dividing and ruling and battling alone.
So you have discovered who that they are.
Well, this is where it gets even more bizarre, really. what happened, Nicole, was I wrote a book in about 1994-95 called And the Truth Will Set You Free, which has been updated many times since. But what that focused on was the manipulation by this network, which goes under the name of the Illuminati, the Illuminated Ones, illuminated into knowledge the rest of us don't get unless we really go looking for it. It concentrated on the political, economic kind of level of the manipulation. And when I kind of put that together and named many of the names of the foot soldiers who are, if you like, the daily gopher manipulators on behalf of people who work from the shadows, I realized that structure they'd put together to allow the few, and it is a very few, to manipulate the many, could not have been put together in 5 years or 50 years. It had to go back a very long time. So when did this start? And I started to go back looking for some kind of origin. Were not infiltrated by this network. They were created by them from the start to give the illusion of freedom and choice while fundamentally suppressing both. For instance, we have, in America, you had the choice at the last election between Al Gore and George W. Bush. For me, that's not much of a choice, especially when you realize that both of those people, as at every other presidential election, are answerable to the same force. And that to run for president, you need fantastic sums of money, and the only people that attract that from the people that can afford to give that money are those that are acceptable to those who give the money. In other words, the president is bought and sold, lock, stock, and barrel before the vote's even made. It was very clear that these institutions of politics, etc., were created as they are by this Illuminati for a distinct the illusion of freedom while fundamentally suppressing it. But I kept going back. I got back to the time of the 1100s, the time of the so-called Crusades in the Holy Land, and the creation of very significant secret societies like the Knights Templar and the Knights Hospitaller of St. John of Jerusalem, known today in their Catholic version as the Knights of Malta, who have all these hundreds of years later among their number the top people in global politics, business, banking, media ownership, etc. And I kept going back, and eventually I'm thousands of years BC before I'm coming across anything like an origin of this story, and that's not really the start of it. It goes back much further than that, but it is a point where you can pick it up around 4000 BC at the time of Sumer and ancient Egypt and stuff in the Near and Middle East. And I went back also with the knowledge, which I couldn't explain at the time, that these families sit at the top of these pyramids are obsessive with interbreeding with each other. And I knew it was true, but why? I mean, it can't just be snobbery. What's going on here? And of course, you've got the well-documented aristocracy and royal families of Europe and elsewhere in the world who have always obsessively interbred with each other. And so I went back with this knowledge. And then when you get thousands of years BC, you find all over the world, literally all over the world, the same recurring story in ancient accounts and legends and stories from the ancient world that have been carried through to today by the shaman and the native peoples, etc. And that is that way, way back, there was an interbreeding between humanity or humans and a non-human race. Probably many, many non-human races, but in terms of the manipulation of the world today, one in particular, which seems to have taken a reptilian kind of genetic expression. And all over the world you find references to this serpent race and their interbreeding with humans, and the fact that the hybrids, the hybrid bloodlines created by this interbreeding, were the ones placed into the positions of ancient ruling royal power. And this is where we get the ages-old theme from of the divine right to rule. The divine right to rule because of your bloodline. The Chinese emperors, for instance, claim the right to be emperor because of their descendants from the serpent gods. And you find the the kings of and queens of the Nearer Middle East in Sumer and other places were known as the dragon bloodlines, the dragon kings, the serpent kings, the serpent bloodlines. And
I guess this is where it gets challenging for people.
Well, I'm sure it will, but I mean, you know, this conversation a few centuries ago, it would have been extremely challenging if someone like me had come on and said, you know, the Earth's actually round and not flat, because the prevailing wisdom was that it was flat. And of course, it's, as I've said many times over the years, one of the greatest, if not the greatest defenses that this manipulation has against exposure is that what is actually going on in the world compared with the conditioned movie that this network imposes on us day after day is so vast, the difference, that even when the truth comes out, it's so fantastic compared with conditioned reality that most people just dismiss it. But my last three books total 1,500 pages. You know, this is not someone sitting in a darkened room smoking something and coming up with these conclusions. This has been done from hard research over 12 years in nearly 30 countries now, and the evidence is absolutely enormous. I can present far more evidence that what I've just said is true than any newsreader or journalist can, that what he's telling you on the news tonight is true. And not that they ever bothered doing that anymore. But this interbreeding created a hybrid bloodline which has been described to me by insiders as having a corruption of the DNA. And this corruption allows two things to happen. First of all, in these particular bloodlines, it disconnects people from the same emotional responses that the rest of the population have. Most of the people in the world have what I call an emotional fail-safe mechanism, in which our emotions jump in and stop us doing the more horrendous, outrageous things because of the emotional consequences for us of seeing the emotional consequences or seeing what they could be of the people that we're doing things to. You know, I mean, this is why, you know, people would find it absolutely emotionally horrific to think of abusing a child. And that's why most people don't do it, among other reasons. We have this emotional fail-safe mechanism. However, if you have a disconnection from that and you don't have the same emotional responses that we have, then you can do things to people, even large numbers of people, like September the 11th, and have no emotional consequence whatsoever for doing that. Therefore, your potential to do staggeringly awful, horrific things is much greater if you don't have this emotional response. And the other thing, and this is coming around to what you were talking about in terms of you know, who's behind this, mm-hmm. really, there had to be a force which spans these thousands of years. You know, you've got physical bodies, you know, being born and then dying within this network, and people have said to me, understandably, you know, why would they have done it hundreds of years ago, knowing that they would never see the outcome? Well, the reason is because there's a common theme, and it's consciousness. And the other thing that this DNA does, this DNA corruption, is it allows these particular bloodlines, these particular physical forms, to be possessed by other consciousness, malevolent consciousness, what has been called in folklore for hundreds and thousands of years as demonic entities, etc., etc. It allows the possession of those bodies by this malevolent consciousness far more easily than the rest of the population. And so, if they can manipulate these particular bloodlines into the positions of power, they can, these other dimensional entities that operate just outside the frequency range of the physical senses of the human body, then they can put themselves in those positions of power. And the genealogy supports this. If you follow the bloodlines that were the ancient kings and queens of the ancient world through history, you find that they moved out of this Near and Middle Eastern area where they were the pharaohs and the the kings and queens of Babylon and Sumer, etc., into Europe, where they became the European aristocracy and royal families. And then through these European empires, like the British Empire, they exported these bloodlines all over the world. And they have remained in the positions of power in the institutions ever since. This is why at this time you have, what, 260 million people in America. And since 1776, you've had so many hundreds of millions more. And yet, the 43 of those hundreds of millions that have actually become president of the United States in absolutely no way express the genetic diversity of the American people. They have a very, very narrow genetic history, which goes back where? To European royalty and aristocracy, and down from that down to the royal lines of the ancient world. And this is why I was able to predict 3 years ago that George W. Bush would be the next president of the United States, because I knew his bloodline and I could see the manipulation down in Texas to raise his political profile, which put him eventually in the presidency. There was no way he was going to lose that election, no matter what people in Florida may have voted, because the president of the United States is not elected by ballot. In truth, he is selected by blood, and this is why the genetic history of the American 43 American presidents is so amazingly narrow. I mean, of the 43, 4 go back to Charlemagne, one of the most famous monarchs of what we now call France, back in, what, the 8th century or so, who has come up in my research again and again in terms of the history of this whole scam.
I'm curious as to what your take on September 11th would be.
Well, very simple. I mean, I would go as far as to say that Bin Laden was no more the mastermind of September the 11th than I was. And this comes to the key technique that this network has used for thousands of years to manipulate humanity to agree and even demand that the agenda is introduced, even though people don't even know the agenda exists. And it's one that I've termed problem-reaction-solution. It's played on us every day, and September the 11th was the most blatant example of it I've ever seen. What happens is that this network wants to introduce a world government, a world army, a world central bank, a world currency, a microchip population, and a constant and total surveillance society, where they can go into your bank account, where they can follow you on the internet, where they can read your emails without having to go to law and get permission. It's just a matter of course to tap your phones whenever they want, to have you on cameras wherever you go, and eventually they want a microchip so that there's no way you can go where they don't know, and all that stuff. Now, problem-reaction-solution is the mass mind manipulation technique that overcomes resistance to this agenda. They know that if they offered that package that I've just described openly, without anything going on, just said this is what we're going to do, they know they would get a massive reaction against it. There would be people standing up and saying, that's a fascist state, we're not having this, what are you doing? This is America, for instance, this is Britain, we're a free country, you can't do that. So what they do is play the scam. At stage one, they create a problem. The problem is always, however, blamed on someone else. That is crucial. What you call in America the patsy, the Lee Harvey Oswald. And the patsy can be seen very easily, because the patsy is always brought into the picture very, very soon after the event's taken place. You'll notice that they arrested Lee Harvey Oswald immediately after Kennedy was assassinated. Lee Harvey Oswald could never have killed Kennedy unless he had a bullet which went past Kennedy, turned round and came back. Absolutely impossible, as even official investigations in America have shown since. They arrested Timothy McVeigh very, very quickly after Oklahoma, when independent bomb experts that have spent a lifetime in the American military, including a guy called Brigadier Ben Partin, have said that not only didn't the fuel fertilizer device in the Ryder truck cause that horrific damage of the James P. Moe building on April the 19th, 1995, it could not possibly have done so. And the only way that building could have fallen as it did was for high-tech devices with a security clearance of nuclear weapons were on some of the pillars inside the building. But again, the patsy was named early, and so everyone focused on who was to blame. And then you had September the 11th. Within minutes of it happening, almost certainly within hours, the government officials like Colin Powell and others were pointing the finger at Osama bin Laden. And so, you know, the alarm bells start going off immediately. And what you had on September the 11th was a massive problem, and then the patsy name. There's stage one. What happens in the next stage in this scam is the reaction, and you get that from the public by reporting the problem you've created but blame someone else for in the way that you want people to perceive it. And I keep asking people all over the world this same question. Name me one piece of information about what happened on September the 11th, who was responsible for it, and what should happen as a result of it that has not come from an official source when broadcast or printed by the mainstream media. Nothing. The whole story has come from the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the White House, Downing Street, and all the rest of them. No independent investigation, just repeating what the official stories say. And it's, amazing when you see journalists, when the Taliban said something, the journalists would say, oh yes, but we have no independent confirmation of this. Quite right, that's good journalism. But the same people would accept as true what some guy in a dark suit with Pentagon behind him would say, or what George Bush would say, or Tony Blair would say, without saying, or even though it was true, we have no independent confirmation that this is correct. Therefore, what the media has become is merely a voice piece and a broadcaster, a megaphone, for the official version of events. So you've now got to stage two. You've had the problem. You've now got the reaction from the public, gleaned by the way the whole thing is presented, of fear, the four-letter word that controls the world. Once you get someone in fear, you've got control of them. Of outrage, understandably, and of this can't go on, something must be done, what are they going to do about it? And once you have that, you can then go to stage three, in which you offer the solutions to the problem you have created. And that solution, since September the 11th, has been a massive advance in exactly the agenda that these people have been working for thousands of years. You have a situation now where it is quite legal for the CIA to assassinate anyone they like, so long as they say that we believe they are involved in terrorist activities. You have a situation where foreign nationals in America can now quite legally be taken off the streets, put in jail for as long as the government want, just because the government or an agency of the government decides they could be involved in terrorist activity. And they won't even be tried in a public court where the evidence can be made public against them. They will be tried by secret military courts. This is America in 2001 because of September the 11th.
That's
same with all this other surveillance of going into bank accounts, of tapping your phones. It's been an incredible explosion of surveillance and control, not just in America, but here we now have the law going through to introduce jailing without charge and holding people without trial, which is a fundamental assault on the very basics of so-called British justice over centuries. This all is happening because of September the 11th, and it goes further than that. Immediately after September the 11th happened, a former Pakistan foreign minister called Naik told the BBC that he had attended a meeting in Berlin in mid-July at which American officials told him that they planned to attack Afghanistan before mid-October with an international coalition force, that they wanted to remove bin Laden and Mullah Omar, the leader of the Taliban, and replace the Taliban with a regime of their liking and their choosing, headed by the exiled king of Afghanistan, exiled in Rome, called Zahir Shah. Now, he was also told and said at the time that America would attack Afghanistan from Uzbekistan, and it was all planned. And since he said that, immediately after September the 11th, all the things that he said he was told in Berlin in mid-July have actually happened, which means we then go to the next stage of this, which is, if they planned to attack Afghanistan before mid-October in the way that they have, and on my website, former Master Sergeant with U.S. Special Forces has pointed out that there's absolutely no way in the world that the forces could have been gathered together and put together between September the 11th and the bombing started, starting in Afghanistan. That had to be planned months and months before September the 11th. If they planned to do that, which they clearly did, how on earth would they have possibly convinced or persuaded public opinion around the world, and indeed political opinion, to have got together to have this bombing assault in Afghanistan if nothing had happened between mid-July and October, middle of October? There's no way they could have pulled it off or even suggested it. It would have been left out of sight. But with September the 11th, it became a piece of cake to do what they've done. Also, the British forces, which have been attacking Afghanistan from Oman, did not leave for Oman after September the 11th. They left Portsmouth, just across the water from where I'm talking to you from, on September the 3rd, the biggest naval and military force to leave the British Isles since the Falklands War, left here on September the 3rd for Oman. And so by the time the atrocities in America happened, they were closing in on precisely the place they needed to be to attack Afghanistan as part of the coalition force. And even the news organizations in Britain made reference to this and said, oh, what a bit of luck that the British forces are in the right place at the right time. Well, that's nothing to do with luck and everything to do with planning from a long time ago.
So why do they
on my website, you know, there's a tremendous amount of information which demolishes the official version of September the 11th. It's a joke. The whole thing's a joke. The idea, for instance, which the media broadcast without challenge, without question, that somehow the FBI found a paper passport of one of the hijackers near the rubble of the World Trade Center, a hijacker who would have been in a plane that hit that building with a fireball, and then despite that, and all the enormous rubble, etc., a paper passport survives, and they happen to find it. I mean, the whole thing is insane. But such is the mind manipulation that goes on and the conditioning that we've really just forgot to question anything, and certainly the media has. So, you know, the whole September the 11th was a massive problem reaction solution scenario orchestrated within the borders of the United States, and so we have a situation in which those who created the problem, or were our front men for those that created the problem, more to the point, are the very people in the dark suits in the White House and the Pentagon, etc., etc., and Downing Street Street who are offering the solutions to the problems that that force has created.
So why do they want to be in Afghanistan? Or to be bombing Afghanistan?
Say again?
Why exactly do they want to be bombing Afghanistan?
Well, there's many levels to it. I mean, I wrote on my in a book called The Biggest Secret in 1998 that the plan was to stimulate a holy war with the Muslim world and also a conflict with China as part of this agenda of creating fear and problem reaction solution scenarios to advance this global fascist state of world government, world army, etc. I mean, what we're seeing in places like Afghanistan and the Gulf and Kosovo and Bosnia is merely the rapid evolving of the world army. That's one of the levels that is happening here. And Afghanistan is merely the start. September the 11th was not it. It was the start of a new cycle to push this agenda on. And so the Afghanistan is not the end of it. It's just one stage of it. And on a financial level, I mean, there are many levels to this. The major oil companies, which of course the Bush family and Dick Cheney, etc., are very much part of, have been trying to plan and build a gas and oil pipeline across Afghanistan from the Caspian oil fields for a long time, but the Taliban were getting in the way. And now the Taliban have been removed, you watch that oil and gas pipeline start to progress very rapidly. But what we're going to see as the months unfold is just an escalation of this. More terrorist activity, which will be blamed on various people to justify going in and bombing other countries. You know, I'm waiting for them to start to turn on Iraq and places like that and to find justification for it. But even having said that, you know, people have no idea. When something goes from the news, they think it's gone away. That is the most dangerous time for the victims. In Iraq, another example of the way this works. As I pointed out in a book called Anatrusha Set You Free, George Bush the father and Saddam Hussein were associates. They shared oil kickbacks from oil deals in Iraq, totaling hundreds of millions of dollars. Saddam Hussein was and is a member of a very elite secret society in this Illuminati network in the Middle East called the Safari Club, and people like the former Egyptian president Anwar Sadat were members of it as well. And as the CIA admitted at around the time of the Gulf War in 1991, they put Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party into power in Iraq, just as they funded and armed Osama bin Laden and the people that became the Taliban during the Afghanistan war against the Soviet Union. They decided, because it suited them, that they wanted to attack Iraq in 1991. And the idea, so they said, according to George Bush the father, was to remove Saddam Hussein. That was the whole point of it. But if you remember, when they had the Iraqi forces in total disarray, because it wasn't really a war, there was only one side that had any chance in it, all they had to do in the end to remove Saddam Hussein from power, which the war was supposed to be all about, was to drive to Baghdad. Well, what happened at that point? George Bush, the father, then president, pulled the troops out and said, we're not going any further. And then after that, they had the nerve to say, oh yeah, but Saddam Hussein's still in power, so we've got to have sanctions against Iraq. Not sanctions against Saddam Hussein, who's not troubled by them at all. Sanctions against the Iraqi people. And on a 60 Minutes program in America in 1996, and look how far back that is now, Madeleine Albright, the then Secretary of State, had to admit that those sanctions had cost the lives by then of 500,000 Iraqi children. I mean, according to aid agencies, etc., it's running at about 5,000 Iraqi children dying as a result of the sanctions every month now. And it's amazing that if people only looked behind the veil, they'd see that these things are going on. And the people that are doing that and perpetuating that are precisely the same people who are standing in front of cameras expressing their so-called morality and saying we must have a war to protect freedom and liberty. I mean, these are the very people that are taking it away from people all over the world. And the number of people who've died in Iraq, people have no real idea about, and it's the same in the number of civilians who've died in Afghanistan so far, far more than ever has been made public.
Well, I found one thing really interesting on your website and in your book, which is about sort of loving our way out of this situation that you say we're in. And because rather than being sort of from a place of doom and gloom, you take this to a really light place. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, you know, the world that I've just been describing and the world that we see when we look through our eyes or look at the news or look out of the window is merely the physical expression of our inner selves. When we look out of our eyes, what we see is a figment of our imagination, literally. And so we create the external reality that we are experiencing within. There was a wonderful American comedian called Bill Hicks, who, very profound man, and used humor to make some very profound points. And as part of a joke, he once said, matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration. We're all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There's no such thing as death. Life is just a dream, and we are the imagination of ourselves. And that is the most critical thing, I would say, to understand if we want to get out of here. We are the imagination of ourselves. Now, this Illuminati have carried very advanced knowledge from the ancient world and passed it on through initiations at the top of the secret society network and kept it out of the public arena. And as I said earlier, by going into countries like Africa and the Americas and Australia and then destroying the knowledge and the structure of the native peoples, they have sucked out of circulation what remained of that knowledge. And at that level, they know that we, when we look through our eyes, are merely looking at a figment of our imagination, that our lives are the physical expression of the imagination of ourselves. And so what they are doing is externally conditioning our imagination of ourselves so that we will therefore then, if we accept that conditioned reality, create that reality as a physical experience. Simply, life and the way you think and see the world and how you act. And what the Illuminati have set up is a structure within this frequency range we call the world, in which when we are born and we enter this world physically, the structure is set up to disconnect that incarnate consciousness from the ocean. And therefore, like I said earlier, if you can do that and then control the information that comes through the eyes and the ears, you take that incarnate consciousness, you isolate it as a droplet from the ocean, and you condition it to see the world in itself the way that suits you. And in the end, it's vibrational, because as experiments that have gone on in recent years have started to indicate, the vibration of fear, when we feel fear, our consciousness vibrates slowly. It's a long, slow wavelength, this vibration emotion of fear. Love, unconditional love, I love you, George Bush, I love you, Queen of England, I love you because you exist, even though you're doing these horrendous things. That kind of unconditional love has a very, very fast wavelength. It makes your consciousness vibrate very, very quickly when you're in that state of being, that imagination of self. Therefore, it brings us to a very simple vibrational equation, if you like. If the highest levels of ourselves of pure love, they are vibrating very, very fast. Fear is vibrating very, very slow. If our incarnate consciousness, therefore, can be placed, and that's what this structure is all about that we come into in this this world, on this planet, if that incarnate consciousness can be placed into a position of fear, and almost if not everyone on this planet is in some form of fear, some more extreme than others, and September the 11th, of course, has massively advanced that in so many people, then the incarnate consciousness is vibrating to the slow wavelength dominated by fear. It can do no other but disconnect from its higher levels that are vibrating to pure love. It's like having a radio tuning it to Radio Los Angeles. If you tune it to Radio Los Angeles, you will not get Radio San Francisco because it's on a different dial. And so the only way that we are going to make a dramatic change in our individual lives and collectively on this planet is by reversing what happened. We have feared our way and been encouraged to fear our way into vibrational disconnection from who we really are, which is pure love. And therefore, the only way we are going to reverse that is not by stockpiling weapons. It's not by hating the Bushes or the Blairs or the other people involved in this network at a much higher level than those two. It is by getting into a state again, as much as we can in this manipulated world, of unconditional love for all. And in that way, we will start to vibrate our incarnate level closer and closer and closer to who we really are, which is pure love, and therefore we will start to reconnect with our multidimensional self, which fear has disconnected us from. And people think, oh, love, what do you mean? These people are sacrificing children. These people are creating wars. These people are creating atrocities that kill thousands of people, etc. How can you talk about unconditional love? As if it's like, that means you lie on your back and you say, do what you like, walk all over me, drive your truck over me, I love you. That's not what it's about. Love will always do what it believes to be right without fear of the consequences. It doesn't even consider consequences, it just does what it believes to be right. And therefore, you can have love for someone, unconditional love for someone, but at the same time not stand for what they're doing. And the two are not exclusive of each other. But, you know, I can honestly say, sitting here, that despite the grotesque horrors that I have uncovered about the Bushes, about the people that run the world, about the British royal family and the people that run the banking system, I have no hate for those people. And I just want to expose what's going on so it can stop, but I have no hate for those people. And if we do, if we hate those that we are seeking to expose, then we just become part of them. As I've said before, what you fight, you become. This is not a fight. We don't have to fight for freedom, and you certainly don't fight for peace. You peace for peace, and you express freedom to create freedom. And it's a totally different approach, and it's one that the only one that's going to succeed. Because what happens if you fight for freedom or you fight for peace? You just create twice the fighting, twice the conflict, twice the violence, which is exactly what has been happening, of course, in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that I think you're getting people to really think about things in a different light on so many different levels, because, based on what you've been saying, it certainly would explain, you know, I've been trying to understand why the news focuses on the worst 1% of the stuff going on 99% of the time through all mediums 24 hours a day to get us focused on every bad thing that's happening and put us all sort of in a fear place. And so I guess what you're saying is that sort of, there's no accident.
Well, it's certainly not an accident. I mean, there was a famous newsreader in Britain a few years ago who said precisely that. He came out and said, why does the news always focus on what's the terrible things going on in the world when in fact so many good things are happening? And this man was absolutely lambasted by his own profession through the media. Because, you know, a television news bulletin, if you don't disconnect from it, and you see, once you start to take your power back, and this is why this information is that I'm putting out and other people are putting out is so important. It's actually not about fear. It's not about putting out, oh, this is terrible, what's going on, oh my goodness. It's actually making people aware. Awareness is power. Knowledge is power. And when you start to realize how the scam works, you can observe it without being pulled into it. So you can watch a news bulletin and not get pulled into the fear and not get pulled into the manipulation, because you're seeing what's actually being said and what's actually being broadcast to you, and the reason it's being broadcast in that way, and the reason this official person is saying this and this official person is saying that. You can watch it in a detached way and see what's really happening in front of your eyes, and therefore you don't get pulled into the stuff they want to pull you into the fear, into the outrage and all that stuff, because you know it's all a scam, and you know it's trying to glean certain things from you, and emotionally and mentally, and in terms of your responses, and therefore you can make sure that you're above all that and you don't get pulled into it. For instance, problem, reaction, solution, that whole technique that is played on us every day, there's a very simple antidote to it. It's a simple question. Who benefits? Who benefits from me believing what these people are telling me about this event, this person, this situation? And if you ask that, invariably, and you apply that to September the 11th and see what comes up, invariably what comes back is who benefits is anyone that wants to further erase freedoms, wants to further create the brother society, over and over. That's what you see when you ask that question. And like I say, awareness of what's going on in the world is not negative. It's power to control our own destiny and not be manipulated. And I wish that some people in what's become known as the New Age movement would stop using spirituality as escapism, a reason to run away and say, oh no, I'm going to sit cross-legged on this hill because I don't have to look at this and all this stuff. Because that's what a number of people that I've met around the world in these situations are actually doing. They're using the illusion of spirituality as an excuse not to go into places and into situations that they just don't want to go into. And for me, spirituality is not about escapism. It's about taking those values and grounding them in this dimension and changing this dimension in line with those values. It's certainly not running away and saying this is terrible and we mustn't talk about anything negative. I mean, one man's meat is another man's poison, they say. Well, one person's negative is another person's empowerment. It's just a state of being. It's just in the mind of the observer of the same situation or the same information.
Yeah, I liked what you had to say about sort of the path of enlightenment not necessarily being happy, fluffy.
No, I think, you know, I mean, I'm talking, is someone talking from serious experience, Nicole, about the fact that the road to enlightenment, if that's what it is not like that, because within the first year that I started to awaken, and that story I talked about earlier, I was on the front page of every newspaper in Britain as a person who'd gone completely mad, was having a midlife crisis, and basically had gone completely crazy. You know, about 2 years into this journey, after my initial awakening, I thought, if this is spirituality, you can stuff it. This is no fun at all. And, you know, you meet people around the world who have really gone for this, who have really gone on this journey and with a real desire to positively change and transform who they are. And again and again, they'll tell you the same story. Once they started on the journey, all hell broke loose in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not about walking down beautiful country lanes with nymphs, with trumpets playing all around you, and all the stunt birds dropping on your shoulder and singing to you and all this stuff. People might like to think it is, and, you know, I would have liked to experience that two years into my journey rather than what I did. But what is going on is perfectly explainable. The greatest, for me anyway, the greatest power of change in our lives is intent. You know, what we put out vibrationally, that vibrational expression of who we are, our imagination of self, pulls towards us other vibrational fields that sync with it. And we call these vibrational fields people, places, ways of life, experiences, opportunities or no opportunities, depending on our imagination of self. And therefore, we are drawing towards us a physical expression in front of our eyes of our inner self, our inner imagination of self. And intent is the greatest power to change what we're experiencing into something else. And because once we put our intent out there, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to achieve, this is where I want to go, I want to break out of this conditioned reality, I want to be a multidimensional being again, and I want to express that multidimensional ocean in this physical world, I want to do what's necessary to do that. When you put that intent out, not every now and again, not when there's an R in the month, or, you know, every time, that intent vibration will draw to you what you need to do to achieve that intent. What a lot of people seem to think is that what that will draw to you are, you know, wonderful situations and nymphs playing trumpets in, you know, beautiful country lanes and all that stuff. I'm spiritual now, so that's just going to happen to me. What that intent normally draws towards us, as many people listening to this program will certainly think with, is incredible aggravation and sundry pains in the backside who come and give us a very hard time. And what we're actually doing, because we then think we must be doing something wrong. No, no. What's happening is intent is saying, you want to break the conditioning, you want to do this, you want to achieve that, you want to be a multidimensional connected being, right. All that suppressed stuff inside you, all that conditioning inside you, got to go, darling. And so what that does, it puts people and situations right into our face. That means that we can't run away from it anymore. We have to face our inner self and our inner crap by looking at it through the eyes in the form of people, situations, etc. And a lot of people at this time go, ooh, I'd like to transform, but not that badly, thank you very much. And they're off and they're out of it and think, I don't want to know about that stuff, it's no fun. The people that really mean it, they go with it and they come through these incredibly challenging situations, and they keep walking and they keep following the journey and they keep putting out the intent. Okay, it's not fun, but I want to go there. And they're the people who clean themselves out of all this emotional debris that we carry. And once we do that, we start to vibe. When we clear the fear out, we clear the stuff out that's holding us down vibrationally. And once that starts to go, and it's a constant process of filtering it, because we're in a very manipulated, challenging world, then we start to vibrationally vibrate quicker and quicker and quicker, and start to get closer and closer to multidimensional reality and the multidimensional infinite beings that we are. And the closer we get, the more our lives change, the more our perceptions change, and the more we look through these same eyes to see a very different world. suddenly you can see all the stuff you couldn't see before. You start to read the world like an open book, when before you were stuck in all this stuff and stuck in the illusion, you were buying things that you would laugh at now because they're so ludicrous.
Well, it's an amazing thing, and we've gone about an hour and a half, and barely, as you said, we would scratch the surface. We have to do this again. It does. I think I've asked you 3 questions so far.
I've had the hands-on healing, you see, and I've had the crystal therapy, and I've had the acupuncture, but I've still got verbal diarrhea now.
Well, we don't want to cure you of that necessarily. We'll just have to do it again. There we go.
Sure.
But what we'll do is we'll put a link up, and people can go and check out your site and check out some of this stuff on their own. It's a massive site. Set aside another hour and a half to go through there. Holy cow.
I know. But
just hang on the line, and we'll get your website address so we can put it up. But let's do it again.
Okay. Thanks, Nicole.
All right.